Thank you. Please be seated. This morning, the court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are J. Hiram Moore Limited versus Mary Greer, Storage and Processors Incorporated, Bert and Leonel Guerrero versus Ramon Reyes, and FFE Transportation Services Incorporated versus Larry and Deborah Fulgham. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and will complete the arguments before lunch. Justice O'Neill is on her honeymoon, and I'm sure she's reading these briefs and thinking about the case, but she's not physically here with us today, but she will participate in the deliberation and decision of these matters. The court is taping these arguments, and if you wish to purchase a tape of any argument, you may do so by making application with our clerk. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Moore versus Greer.
May it please the court, Mr.
Jad
Davis will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. The issue before the court in this case is the interpretation of a deed, a royalty conveyance. It is a question of law for the court. The petitioner Moore purchased the royalty interest from a company called Steger Oil Company, who purchased from Greer, the respondent. In other words, the transaction at issue was not between Moore on the one hand and Steger on the other. There is no dispute in the record that Moore had no notice whatsoever that Greer was claiming to own any interest in the property conveyed. There are two lines of cases that have been followed in the state for 100 years in conveyancing. And they're different cases, and they involve different grants of interest. The one line of cases is called the adjacent, what the Texas Oil and Gas Association in its amicus brief called the adjacent acreage cases. In the adjacent acreage cases, a specifically described tract is granted, and then words similar to the effect, and everything contiguous or adjacent thereto that I own. In the geographic grant line of cases that have been recognized for 100 years, the Holloway's line of cases, this line has two elements. It says my interest in the state of Texas, or my interest in the county, or my interest in a town, or my interest in a survey. It has no adjacent or contiguous language in it. In this case, we have a geographic grant, and I filed with the court this morning the specific language. But to summarize the language of the grant at issue, it conveys the Six Frills gas unit, and then in addition to, it conveys Greer's interest in Wharton County, the royalty and overriding royalty interest that she owned on a countywide basis. The confusion from the Court of Appeals and the thing that has gotten all of the title lawyers and title companies to sweating is that the Court of Appeals took the adjacent acreage case and decided a geographic grant deed on the precedent of an adjacent acreage case and held that you cannot convey more land other than small strips that are or should have been included. And therefore, the Court of Appeals, because of the confusion, although it cited the geographic grant cases, failed to see the distinction between the two lines of cases that have been running along in tandem and operating very well for at least 100 years.
Ask a question.
Go ahead.
It's kind of a little bit aside, but Is your position that this conveyance grants just royalty mineral interest, or does it include her fee simple interest in, I think it was tract three that she took from her mom?
Right.
Mother? Is it just mineral interest,
it's
or
just
is it
mineral
everything
interest.
She owns in the county?
And there's a case.
I'm sorry, what was it?
There is a case, Allison versus Smith. In the deed, they talk about mineral and royalty interest. And then later in the deed, they talk about lands. And then in the habendum and warranty clause, they talk about mineral interest again. And this court said, wait, that's ambiguous. Are we talking about surface? Are we talking about minerals? Or are we talking about minerals and surface? And I reread this for that question last night. I think this deed is very clear that it only deals with royalties, overriding royalties, and minerals.
Okay, so you're not making any claim,
no
full
claim
ownership
to
of tract three. Okay.
There is one place in the deed where it says said lands,
and all
but it clearly
lands.
References the royalty and override that precedes it. The said lands were described as royalty and override, so we don't have any surface issue. The Texoga amicus brief, being fully prepared now, I think it is the best written in this case, better than ours. It's short. It explains the policy of the adjacent two cases and the geographic grant cases. It explains why you do it, why they're different, and why the court has done what it's done in the past. I think the Texas Civil Justice League amicus in support of the petitioner emphasizes the importance of the clarification because of the unsettling effect that this case could have. When you look at the specific language of this conveyance, it conveys the Bernard survey in Wharton County, Texas. The next sentence, the grantor agrees to execute any supplemental interest for a better description. And then the next sentence is the geographic grant. In addition to the above described lands, it is the intent of this instrument to convey. And this instrument to convey, and this conveyance does so include all of grantor's royalty and overriding royalty interest in all oil, gas, or other minerals in the above named county or counties, whether actually or properly described herein or not, and all of said lands are covered and included as fully in all respects if the same had been actually and properly described herein. In the Holloway's case in 1939, this court faced a situation where a person over in East Texas had conveyed a tract in Liberty County and reserved one half of the minerals. Subsequently, they conveyed another tract in Liberty County that was not adjacent to the first, and it contained in it a geographic grant that said, in addition, all of my interest in the above named county. And this court held that the purpose of the grant was to enlarge it. And it followed the Holloway's line of cases, and the interest that the court held passed was 30 times as much acreage as that which was specifically described, the quantum. In the geographic grant cases, and the precedent of this court, the quantum of the interest that passes has not been relevant.
But can that be right? If somebody says, I convey this little piece and everything else I own in the county, which is 100 times that much, why would you do that?
One of the reasons you would do it is like in this case. Ms. Greer's interest was under 20 non-participating acres. That's what this case is arguing about. There's 20 acres of minerals. It just so happened after the fact, after that she stole the Steger and after Steger stole the Moore, they drilled a big gas well on it, big one. But the truth of the matter, in a lot of these counties, and the way we're getting land cut up and little tiny mineral interests cut up, that's one reason you do it, is it costs more to do the title work. There's a lot of utility to this. Another one, huge companies, pipeline companies.
Well, I could see if you said, without being specific, everything I own in a particular area, a particular county, then you don't really know whether that's a lot or a little. And as you say, somebody might not want to go to the trouble to do all the title work. Although I suppose they'll have to do it at some point when there's a division order.
Right.
At some point. If you said these 2 acres and everything else is hundreds of acres, it's harder to understand why a grantor would do that.
Well, the 2 acres might be the ones that are producing. And everything, as in this case, the Bernard survey unit was producing. The land outside of it was not. And so, and here's another situation. For example, a pipeline. Let's assume a big company wants a pipeline wants to sell a particular gathering system. And they know it's in 4 counties. Well, rather than draw a deed that gives the center line of 896 easements, they've taken over time from somebody. They just say, we convey to you the such and such gathering system starting here and there, and in addition thereto, we convey to you all the easements pertinent thereto in the following 3 counties. Asset acquisitions, gifts to charity.
And do you know in that situation whether anybody goes and tries to file that conveyance in the deed records?
Oh, sure.
Well, so they eventually go do it.
They file that conveyance of record. Big oil and gas transactions now, asset purchases. The Bartels case, Texas Consolidated Oils versus Bartels, 1954. This is the most recent geographic grant case that is either a Supreme Court or writ refused case. And in that case, the conveyance from Texas Consolidated Oils was all of the oil and gas interests that we own in the United States of America, which includes mostly the states of Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Arkansas, whatever. And the court had before it a quarter section of land in Scurry County out by Snyder. And they said that deed passed that quarter section.
Well, it's been a long time since I've searched a title, and I hope not to have to do it anytime soon, but how in the world could you search a title if there's this kind of record?
Well, you have to file
it in the United States.
Well, you have to file it, number one. So the recording statute, if you want the protection of that, you've got to file the record in the counties
in
where you want
county.
Protection. Where you want protection. And number two, a title examiner, the first thing they do when they make a run sheet is look at the grantor-grantee index. And so
they're going to look at the if I'm selling my house to Judge Hecht,
correct.
The title examiner is going to look at my name for the whole county and just
he
see
should.
What else I have and see if there's any if I still have the right to sell my house to Judge Hecht because maybe I sold it to your oil company last year.
That's correct because there's and that may be why there's fewer and fewer title examiners. These are older fellas. That are really dying off. This group that's really dying off, they ate, sleep, and breathe. Holloway's cases, rule against perpetuity, Dewey versus all those kind of things. But looking back, and I do want to get to the contiguous or adjacent cases, Holloway's is everything I own in Liberty County, and the court said that's a sufficient description to pass it. Sanderson, all the town lots that I own in the city of Knox, Texas, 1937, the Supreme Court said that's sufficient. Texas Consolidated Oil, all gas and mineral interests I own in the United States, 1954, writ refused. Smith versus Westall, 1890, was a statewide conveyance. All land I own in Texas. And the court said that was good. And Witt
going
versus
back to the Chief's question, just as a practical matter, it's been a long time since I've looked at deed records as well, but let's assume in a will, for example, it leaves oil and gas interest to the heirs of so-and-so, and there may be grandchildren and great-grandchildren not named specifically in the will who inherit, and you go get one of these geographic grants
from one of them, how do you go back and search the deed records? How do they show up in the deed records in those circumstances? How do you know?
What would show up in the it would lead you to the probate.
How would that happen? If your name's the, let's say my last name is Smith, and I'm a woman, that's my married name, and I inherit from my great grandmother, and I'm not named in her will.
Right. They wouldn't find you. They would find the decedent.
How?
Well, because the record title would go into your grandmother.
I just say all land I own in Harris County.
Right.
And so how if they go to the Harris County deed records and they're not going to find...
They're not going to find you. They're going to find your grandmother who died. And they're going to go to that...
How do they know about that?
How do they know she died?
How do they know that she's my grandmother and that she... How do they know that to look for my grandmother or grandmother?
Because... And I really am trying to... If you follow the chain down, the record title will go into your grandmother and stop. And you inquire and find out she's dead. And then you hire the landman, and then you go do your inquiry. You go to the estate, and you get the will and the probate records.
Well, let's say I have creditors, and I just say, look, I'm going to sign over everything I owe to you in this county. And I do that. And the creditor has no idea who my grandmother is. They're not looking
right.
for anything specific. Now, where do you go, starting with that grant from me to someone, where do you go to find out what I owe in a particular county?
That, it is not a record, as you point out. But where you go in that instance is you do your affidavit of heirship, you do your homework.
What affidavit of heirship?
Well, for an oil and gas title examiner to...
Now, my creditors now want to find what I own. How do they go find what I own? From my geographic grant to them.
Okay, I misunderstood your question. How do you find, if your grandmother says everything I own in the county, how do you find what you own?
My creditors who I've assigned everything to.
They have to do homework. And the homework that they have to do is investigate who the heirs of that are described in the residuary clause of the will. In other words, you go to the executor and say this...
But they have to trace her family tree.
That's exactly right.
And find out all her relatives.
Right.
And then go look at all of their wills.
That's correct. But if she had never conveyed, they also have to do that too. I mean, in many, landmen spend most of their time with wills tracing heirs.
Well, usually it starts on the other end. They want this piece of property or this area, and then they go research and carry.
That's correct.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Mr. Randy Clapp will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, I'm honored to be here. And I do believe this case is quite a... Pleased that the court is hearing argument in this case. And I want to... no one has talked about this, but I really believe if you analyze the cases, there are three lines of cases, not two. One line of cases is the adjacent acreage, the typical Mother Hubbard clause that you've read about, that picks up the strips and the gores and the undiscovered pieces of land. The second kind of line of cases is the classic global grant. This is Smith v. Westall. All of my property in Brazoria County, all of my property in the state of Texas, or if I'm a pipeline company, all of my pipelines in four counties. That's the classic global grant line of cases. The third line of cases, and it's a very small one, is what I call hybrid, where you combine a specific grant, Blackacre, and then somewhere else in the deed you say, and oh, by the way, I give you everything else in a county or a state or some geographic area. That's what this case is about, and there is not a long line of cases dealing with hybrid global grant deeds.
I understand from your brief, your position is sometimes those can be valid and sometimes not, and we have to look at the particular language.
With regard to the hybrids, Your Honor?
Yes.
With regard to the hybrids, I'm going to argue right now that they ought not to be valid.
Okay. You'd have a bright line rule.
Yes,
you have a specific description, then unless it's a strip and gore, forget about it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And if we look at the cases, there are only three that deal with this kind of a hybrid where you have a specific property description and then a global grant. Holloway's Unknown Heirs versus Whatley is the one that is most on point. I'm going to save it for last. The other two are the Cook case and the Witt versus Harlan case. And those cases are actually a bit different. The Cook versus Smith case was really about a quitclaim deed. The deed that was being analyzed by this court in Cook versus Smith was a quitclaim deed. And the question was whether someone who had an earlier deed got cut off by this quitclaim deed to another party. And what the court decided was there was some language in the deed where the grantor said, "And I hereby convey to you all of the property I own in this town," I believe it was Paducah, "whether set forth herein or not." And the court said that was sufficient words of conveyance to create a conveyance of a specifically described lot. And that specifically described lot, in other words, it was described in the deed, Blackacre. The court held that that was enough language of conveyance to make what was otherwise a quitclaim deed, a deed as to that lot. Because it was specifically described and because he said, "And I hereby convey to you these lots that were set forth." And the reason that was important was there was a person, he didn't own that lot. He had already sold it a few years back. And the question then was, had he deeded it twice? And this court decided that he had. That case was really the reverse of this case, and it involved applying this kind of language to a specific property description of property that you don't own. That's what that case was really about, and that's not what this case is about. The other case, Witt versus Harlan, the grant was, "I give you one half of all the lands I own in Texas." It was a family conveyance. And the question in that case was, how do we analyze this hybrid kind of property description? Because what he did, he said, "I give you half of everything I own in Texas," and then he said, "some of which includes A, B, and C," and he described Blackacre A, Blackacre B, and Blackacre C. And the court held that kind of a grant was a global grant because he used the words "some of which include." In other words, he clearly set forth the fact that he was giving a subset, a partial list. He didn't know everything he owned. But the initial grant was a global grant, a classic global grant. And then he gave a partial list of what he owned. That case was also different because what the trial court had held was that the global grant language conveyed all of his property, not just half. There was a trial court judgment that said that boilerplate language that was so expansive actually conveyed everything he owned. This court said no, that global grant that says one half of everything I own is valid because it is a global grant. The intent of the grantor was plain and clear, and then these specifically described properties really didn't add anything to the deed. And then the third case is Holloway's versus Whatley, Holloway's Unknown Heirs versus Whatley. And in that case, and I submit to this court, is the only case that directly deals with a true hybrid grant. And that was a grant of Blackacre, and then language saying, "And oh, by the way, I give you everything else I own in the county." And this court did hold that in that particular case, the intent of the grantor was clear, and it was a global grant.
And it's true that the amount in controversy was 30 times greater than what was specifically described.
That's correct. And my first argument with regard to Holloway's, and it's set forth in my brief, is that this deed is different, and it ought to be treated differently than the deed in Holloway's. And I've set forth some of the differences in my brief, but basically in Holloway's you had a description of Blackacre, and then immediately thereafter was this expanding language, you know, not just this piece, but everything else in the county. And it brings it right very close to Witt versus Harlan, you know, the half of everything I own in Texas, and oh, by the way, I own these tracts. very similar to that case, although the order of the language was reversed.
Well, I'm confused now, because that's the way I read your brief, is asking us to pay real close attention to this language. But are you saying Holloway's wrong and we should overrule it?
That is one of my arguments, yes.
Okay. All right. Because I've just written that. My
first argument is that it can be distinguished. And my second argument is that it ought to be overruled, that it creates a problem. And that problem is one that has been brought up by the amicus briefs. We've talked about how title examiners examine property. When you have a classic global grant, it creates a small problem, but it's one that I think most title examiners have learned to handle, and title companies and abstractors. You know, this oil and gas company has conveyed all of its land in Texas. Well, you abstract it or you index it that way. But when you have a deed that conveys just blackie, a small piece of land, and then hidden in that deed is some other language, how does an abstractor index that deed or record that deed? It's recorded under that piece of property. And it doesn't get recorded under all the other property they may own in the county.
But you would agree, though, that it's not hidden here. I mean, and Holloway may be one sentence directly below the global grant. Here it's, you know, there's one sentence in between. I mean, how are we to take that language? If you read it, if we were just to read that language alone, it looks as if it is a global grant. And are we, do you want us just to write it out, or what do we do?
The language itself, I agree, is not hidden or said sneakily. It's plain and clear. It was hidden because it was in a pre-printed form. And I'm suggesting to this court, let me get back to my rather than overruling Holloway's, let me get to my argument about distinguishing it. There is not a long line of cases dealing with these hybrid grants. I only found three that truly deal with hybrid grants. There are not a lot of people out there that write these things and rely on things where you describe Blackacre and then a global grant.
Why shouldn't we, though? I mean, only good things can come.
Well, why would you ever want to draw up a deed that grants a specific piece of property and then grants that piece of property and everything else? It doesn't make sense.
Well, my recollection might be wrong, but some of the older standard form oil and gas leases have a specific property description, then say, and all the other interest I own in the county, or something broad like that. It seems like
I would disagree with that. I think you're referring to the Mother Hubbard language in oil and gas leases. It's usually, and all of the other property I own
no,
right around
there. They're contiguous ones, but I thought there's an old Producers 88 prepaid or one of those old leases that said you have a description of a specific property and all the land I own in the county.
I've never seen that.
Okay.
But the problem is best, I guess, illustrated by the amicus brief that Martz and Cooey filed that has all the other Steger deeds in Wharton County. If you look at that list of 23 deeds, look at those 23 deeds, two of them are the same people. In other words, Mrs. Jones conveyed her specific little blackacre and everything else in Wharton County. And then 2 months later, Steger went back to her and bought blackacre B and paid her again. Paid her again. Now, if he thought he was getting all of her property in Wharton County, why did he go back and get a second deed? And that happened twice.
The trouble with this argument is, of course, that we just disregard that sentence. There's no alternative. But your argument is, if there is a specific description, that sentence just does not mean what it says.
If this court disavows hybrid, what I'm calling a hybrid deed, then that would be correct.
But I'm saying, under your theory of the case, however we get there, if there is a specific description in there, then the sentence next after that that says it is the intent to convey everything, it just that doesn't mean that.
Well, I think the Court of Appeals below decided that very issue and said, okay, if it's not a global grant, we don't think it's a global grant, what is it? Then they analyzed it under Jones v. Colley as a Mother Hubbard and said, I think that language could be construed as a standard Mother Hubbard. If there were a small corner lift out or a strip or a gore, then it might be included by that language.
What if your client had drafted this by herself in handwriting and put it in there, initialed it, but what would be your position in that event?
First of all, I can't imagine a grantor drafting a deed that conveys Blackacre and then conveys everything else.
But say she did.
But say,
would that be enforceable?
Under, my argument regarding the overruling under what I'm arguing about Holloway is it would not be, should not be allowed. It creates too many problems to allow that to happen.
Well, in some cases, for example, people own like the home place, and they can describe that. And people in Texas particularly have inherited over the years bits and tiny pieces of oil and gas interests that are spread out not only in the county but all over. And you want to will that to your son or daughter. And so the testator handwrites out, as Justice Smith suggests, here's the home place and everything else I own in the state of Texas. And why shouldn't that be affected?
I think it should be. And that's Whitby Harlan. But the way you draft that deed is you start with a global grant. You say, I give you everything I've inherited.
What, but in my example like that, they say, here's, I deed you the home place. It's the same thing describing the deed from so-and-so to me. And I also deed you all my oil and gas interests in, that I own in the state of Texas. Why shouldn't that be effective?
Because it should be drafted differently. It should be drafted as a global grant first. I give you everything I own in Texas.
But I'm a testator, I'm not a lawyer. That's my intent. Why should the order make any difference? If that's, why shouldn't we take the words at face value?
The order makes a difference because the language in deeds is very, very important. And that's why lawyers should draft deeds and not grantors. There have been many a home drafted document that have created problems, but if we're gonna allow global grants, and I haven't even talked about the fact that a global grant, you don't know what's been conveyed. If you follow the line of cases that talks about the statute of frauds and the nucleus of description that's required and that deeds are void, that don't have a description in them or some document from which you can determine a description, those deeds are void. That's never been reconciled by this court with the line of cases that deals with global grants.
I remember struggling with that in law school. If you miss, your square doesn't close and you're specifically described conveyance, it's void. Yet if you say all the land I owned in the county was valid, I never understood logically why that was the case.
I've never understood that either, and this court's never addressed it. I think it is because it's so convenient. Allowing global grants accomplishes a lot of good things. Estates, inheritances, title curative work. If you read the cases, none of the global grant cases, though, true global grant, classic global grant cases, really deal with third parties who have also been deeded the land. And
you're
so,
really asking us to. You did not plead fraud or try to prove fraud specifically.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Tell me what were all your theories and what happened?
Well,
undue influence.
Undue influence, mutual mistake, fraud, constructive fraud, misrepresentation. The whole gamut.
Okay.
Was pled in the trial court, but the Mr. Moore's attorney, Jad Davis, filed a motion for summary judgment saying, "I'm a bona fide purchaser for value without notice. All of these defenses are cut off. I own the minerals," under the clear language of the deed. That motion was granted. And so no facts. The trial court never actually heard any facts other than the summary judgment evidence.
Do you have a cause of action against Steiger? Do you have a cause of action against the original person, Steiger?
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
And that's ongoing?
It's on hold.
In the district court?
Yes. It was severed. The cause of action against him was severed, and it's been abated, pending the outcome of this appeal.
But all those unconscionability and fraud and all those are the type of allegations you'd have against him?
Against him, those can be pursued.
Mr. Clapp, just so I understand, you're not saying this deed was ambiguous then, are you?
Yes, I am. And I want to bring this.
So this
that's,
is the
that's
rule
one
of construction.
My,
this is the rule of construction you're talking about?
One of the reasons that I believe the court below properly held that this was not a global grant, a true global grant, is because the language was creates an ambiguity. This court held that in Smith v. Allison. If you look at the Smith v. Allison case, the language that was used was global grant language. It's not the adjacent adjacent property language. It's the true global grant language. Let's see, I've got that here somewhere. Oh, here it is. The parties, however, intend this deed to include, and the same is hereby made to cover and include, not only the above described land, but also any and all other land and interest in land owned or claimed by grantor in said survey. Now, it didn't say county, it said survey. Or surveys in which the above described land is situated, or adjoining surveys. Now, this court held that that language was ambiguous. And they, what they did is they allowed parole evidence that was introduced at trial where the lady said, I didn't intend to grant this other land in the survey. I only intended to grant the described property. So this, there's precedent for this court finding that this kind of language is ambiguous or creates an ambiguity which allows the introduction of parole evidence about the intent of the grantor.
But so if it is, then it's, you're looking at it as a rule of construction?
Yes. I believe this court can affirm the decision of the court below and accomplish good things. Because even if what Mr. Davis is saying is right, and it's going to create a little bit of confusion about how you're supposed to look at these hybrid deeds, I think that's a good thing.
But you don't agree with the reasoning of the Court of Appeals entirely. Because you've got this third, these hybrid cases.
I think that's a fair statement, John. But if the court, if the opinion below is affirmed, then it will discourage people from drafting hybrid deeds. They're either going to draft a classic global grant, or they're going to convey specific property. The hybrid deed is what will get them in trouble, because how do you know whether it's a Mother Hubbard clause or a global grant clause? And you can distinguish Holloway's, the language in Holloway's, from the language in Greer, but it's tough. And the court didn't really do that. They didn't really lay out a roadmap of the differences. But I will submit to you that this kind of conduct, the drafting of deeds that includes a global grant after a specific piece of property, especially in the oil and gas industry by these landmen who are going out and buying mineral interests from ladies like Mrs. Greer, creates a problem. And that is going to cause instability. If this practice is promoted, it's going to cause instability.
Any other questions?
Let me ask this. Is there a legislative answer to that? Could the legislature say, forbid hybrid grants like these? They enter into and disturb contracts in other areas. Should we defer to them to look at this problem as a social policy problem?
I can't disagree with that. The legislature often tries to solve problems, but I believe that this problem is one best solved by this court in construing language and deeds. That's traditionally been a court function and not a legislative function.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, the legislature in 1999 passed a statute as Property Code Section 5.151 that curbs the conduct that one soliciting to purchase mineral interest by mail, when they send an instrument of conveyance in a draft, what they have to do, or otherwise the conveyance is void. And that postdates this situation. So the legislature has intervened there.
So when you purchase by mail, you can't go to a global...
No, you can do a global grant. It just says in the letter you've got to put in bold type the warning, which is really not any different than the warning placed on the bottom of this deed. It said, consult your counsel. This could affect valuable legal rights. It just warns them. And then if they want to sign a deed and have it filed a record, it's good.
What about our case in Smith v. Allison?
And that was what I was going to next. Smith versus Allison was a case that His Honor asked about. The court held it was ambiguous. You could read the deed there, and you could not tell whether they were conveying minerals.
I don't see any distinction between that deed and this deed.
The Smith versus Allison deed? The Smith versus Allison deed, let me look at it real quick. In the Smith versus Allison deed,
on page 611, the court points out the ambiguity for two reasons. And the ambiguity there was, and really Smith versus Allison doesn't announce a rule of law. They tried the subjective intent of the grantor and the grantee to a jury trial in the trial court and went back and forth. But the language of the Smith versus Allison deed, there is not a lot of difference in the language in Smith versus Allison. But here's the difference. Because other parts of the deed rendered ambiguous, the court said we're going to let the jury decide what the subjective intent of the parties was in this transaction. So,
what's wrong with the jury deciding this?
The jury should decide the subjective intent in the case of ambiguity, but whether or not it's ambiguous is a question of law.
Now that's where I'm having my, what do we do with Smith v. Allison? Because I don't see that that deed's any more or less ambiguous than this.
Well, the global grant is not the part of Smith v. Allison where the court said there was an ambiguity. The court said there was an ambiguity because in the initial granting clause it says we're going to convey minerals. In the warning and addendum clause it said we're going to convey minerals. But right here in Smith v. Allison, but also any other land and interest in land owned or claimed by grantor in said survey. And they said, wait, land means surface and minerals. And this grantor owned the surface and the minerals and only intended to convey the minerals in, internally in other parts of the deed. There was a conflict on whether or not they were conveying minerals or surface.
Under a Smith-type grant, could you lose your homestead?
Sir?
Under a Smith-type grant, could you end up without a, without your home because you were selling a mineral interest?
Well, if you're selling mineral interest, you might lose the minerals under your home if, you know, if they're not previously mortgaged or something.
But if it, if land's included in a global grant, you could end up...
You can sell surface or minerals or both under these. The problem, I think, Your Honor, is not the six or eight cases where this court has decided. The problem here is the hundreds of or thousands of deeds that might be 40 years back under other people's change of title that have never been brought to this court.
What's your response to the amicus reference to the other Steger letters? And counsel said this morning that not only did they have this global conveyance following the specific to one grantor, but sent that same letter twice as to two different pieces of property. That seems to suggest that they didn't believe their intent was to acquire all of the mineral interest in the county.
The response to that is the amicus there indicates that the subjective intent of the grantor is, I didn't mean to sell this. I mean, that's what the amicus says. It's the emotional side of the argument. The law side of the argument, when you find yourself as a subsequent grantee, is what is the objective intent as expressed in the document? And just like Steger, just like Ms. Greer can try Steger at the trial court level for fraud and all these other bad things, those folks can try it too. But if there's an innocent purchaser comes along and buys, relying on the deed records, that, and I don't know all the facts in the amicus situation.
Any other questions?
Your Honor, may I mention one thing? There's one case.
Please.
In the statute of frauds.
Solve our problem.
In the statute of frauds, the statute of frauds issue on specificity has been decided by this court, and the case is Pickett, cited in our brief on the global grant, does not violate because it has ownership and a geographic element. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief break.